At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Honeymoon, here we come! Where's our car?
It's been stolen.
We'll call our insurance agent. I'm right here.
Oh, hey, Jen. You got our invite.
Love the dress.
Are we covered for this?
Of course. That's why you chose Auto Owners. We work together to get the right coverage. So when the unexpected happens, you know you're covered.
That's simple human sense.
Now, how do we get to the airport?
Take mine.
Thanks, Jen.
Ask your independent agent if Auto Owners make sense for you.
Ron Coomer can talk about David Ortiz, he can talk about labor strife, and he can talk about the Chicago Bears because he grew up there. Coom, how are you tonight? Are you in a warm place or not?
I am in a warmer place than you, buddy, I'll tell you that. I am in Clearwater Beach. It is not warm here right now, but it is not, 20 degrees or 20 below zero.
20 below tonight, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little warmer here. It's 50s, and, I wouldn't quite consider it a nice day, but for Florida, it beats the alternative.
Beats the alternative, as they say. Now, did you grow up a big Bears fan? Were you a Ditka Butkus, Gale Sayers guy? Where were you in that pecking order?
Yes. Yeah. Gale Sayers is a little old, a little before my time. I was a little guy when I saw him play. Butkus, kind of the same thing. But definitely Ditka, Mike and I have been friends a very long time. From being here, and big Bears fan always, and then believe it or not, I was a big Vikings fan too, being there so long. I was a season ticket holder, Paul and I'd get a hard time from the Vikings fans when they'd play the Bears at the Dome, and I'd come to sit in my seats, but it was all good.
Well, you know, this Ryan Poles, they're going to hire as their general manager, and the Vikings are looking at him too. I mean, like, is there somebody you want to see the Bears hire as a head coach now?
Well, to me, it's all about the quarterback position, right, in Chicago for the Bears.
And is Fields the guy, right?
Somebody, yeah, Fields, that you can have work with Fields that's going to be good. Is Peterson the guy that was in Philadelphia, or there's some other guys, But you've got to be able to work with that young kid because from when he came to Chicago this year, you kind of felt like he took a step backwards this past year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you didn't feel like he was going to beat you for sure, right?
No, and watching as a fan, I'm no great football mind by no means, but you still understand competition and you understand.
You played the game too, though. You grew up playing some football.
I did, yeah, but. Obviously not to the high level, but you still understand and you can watch people, whether they understand or don't understand what's happening on the field. And, I think he's still, there's still some learning to happen.
Now, Coom, today David Ortiz went into the Hall of Fame, and I don't remember. I was trying to recollect. I guess I could have looked it up, but I forgot to. Did your pass cross with the Twins?
Absolutely. He was traded to the Twins from Seattle.
Yep.
And he showed up, David showed up in spring training and was lockered right next to me in Fort Myers. Big fella and a great guy. We played together for a couple years. Super guy. We've been friends a long time now, but he's, well-deserving. Obviously, it's one of the spots that the Twins, obviously didn't make the right call. But all in all, David was just a tremendous guy. Great for the game, and what a career he had,
I mean, I don't know that he had an enemy, did he? He's one of those guys, as I recall, that would smile all the time. I can remember teammates would kid him about how old are you really, David? Because you know, a lot of times the players that come from somewhere else, there was always rumors about birth certificates and, you know, buying birth certificates. You know what I'm talking about, Coom. And they'd tease him about that. And he'd give it right back to him, but always with a smile.
Well, he was the first 21-year-old. Now, you're sitting next to a guy in a locker room that had probably had 6 or 7 knee surgeries by then. He's supposed to be 21, and he's rubbing ointment on his knees before he's putting sleeves on. And I'm like, he's 21? I'm like, dang. But you know what? He was a great guy. He was a great teammate. I was really happy for him when he went to Boston and things took off. And, you know, when you look at what he did as a player, you know, from the time he left Minnesota to the time he finished after the 13th season, man, that's pretty amazing.
It is. 3 World Series titles, 10 All-Star games. Was it as simple as him saying, I'm just going to swing for the fence?
No, he was a hitter. He was a well-rounded hitter. That's why he did so well. And Fenway Park played right into his game because he could go deep to left over the monster. And if you started coming inside, he was going to kill you. And, you know, so that ballpark was tailor-made for him, and he used it to his advantage, you know, especially during playoffs. I mean, so many big playoff games that, you know, you put him in Fenway, and he really didn't have a hole in his swing.
Ron Coomer is our guest. See, that's what I remember about him, the big guy with the Twins, that he could go the other way.
He could. So he could go the other way with power. He could pull the ball, obviously. You know, at that time with the Twins were not, you know, we had a bunch of young players and, you know, Tom wanted to keep the ball on the ground and use the turf and all those things. And, you know, that wasn't going to be David's deal. And, you know, and then he was pretty exposed at first base on the AstroTurf defensively, even though he had very good hands, he couldn't move all that well. But boy, you put that bat in his hand and all those things went away. When you watched him come to the plate with men on base.
I don't remember him ever playing first base for Boston. Did he ever put a glove on?
A little bit, but not too often. Come playoff time, he had to. You know, I'm sure Terry Francona and other buddies, you know, held his breath every time the ball went over that way. But, you know, hey, that's all right. They got through it, and they won 3 championships because of it.
Yeah, and you'll throw a guy out there if you think he might produce 3 hits, right?
Well, his hits... You know, there was the one playoff series against the Yankees where he had 3 walk-off hits in a row.
I remember that now.
Straight games. I mean, think about that. This is the ALCS to go to the World Series. 3 walk-off hits, 2 bombs, and a single walk-off hits in a row.
You are now a hero for life in Boston, aren't you? I mean, when you do that,
look. Many moons.
now, Alex Rodriguez, another guy you're familiar with, is a part owner of the Timberwolves. What was he like to play against and as a competitor? And what?
Can we still talk about Ortiz? like today, listening to the MLB Network, you know, they were talking about the two of those guys together. You know, I just don't think it's fair to David. David was a good, solid, great guy, good teammate, all the positives. And then you got another guy who, you know, I don't know if I could say any of those things.
I understand.
So, you know what I mean? I'm a big fan of David, put it that way.
So, like a guy like Ortiz, when you talk about what makes a great teammate, and I mentioned, of course, I'm just in the media, and I covered him when he was here, and I always enjoyed it, and you know, the fun that he would have with the whether it was the clubhouse guy or the hitting coach, whoever it was, they were going back and forth. They had nicknames for each other and all those things. But what is to you the definition of a great teammate?
Well, he had time for everybody, and he understood somewhat of his role. I know this happened in Boston, but I watched it happen in Minnesota when the Twins signed Christian Guzman, who you remember, the shortstop, who really didn't speak much English at all. Guzzi was an extremely talented young kid and really nice kid, but, you know, very raw when it came to, you know, our culture and the language and things like that. And I just remember David grabbing him and saying, you come with me and you're always with me. And things were good for Guzzi because David took care of him. And I just looked at that, and he didn't have to do it. And David by no means was a star in the league yet. But he taught Christian how to go around Major League Baseball, and I thought that was really cool to watch. And when you, you know, Mike, as you know, when you watch people in our game and in the media and all that, when they, how they treat people, you get a really good judge on what a person's like by the way they treat people.
Yes.
You know, and
how they treat everyone.
Right? Yeah. He treated the young kid clubhouse guy the same way he would treat Mr. Polad walking in.
Yep.
He was just great to everybody, and that, to me, tells you all you need to know about guys.
Can you stay on this for a quick break? I want to talk about whether we'll see spring training or not.
Absolutely, buddy.
Ron Coomer is our guest. Always fun to visit with the Coom. Will there be a spring training on schedule? Is baseball in jeopardy? We'll ask Coom when we come back. One more Hall of Fame question for Ron Coomer. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling all fall short for the Hall in their final shot to get in. Surprise you at all?
It did, yeah. I thought the two guys would get in this time. I thought Clemens and Bonds would get in just because of the 10-year period, and you know they were trending that way. You know, I never really got to know Barry Bonds. Played against him, but never really got to know him. I was teammates with Roger. And, you know, with all that's gone on with Clemens, I'll say this. What his numbers are, they speak for themselves. But, Mike, you want to talk about a great teammate. He was a great teammate. So, for me, I with all that's gone on with him, I was really pulling for him to get in. He made a pretty nice statement at the end of, like, let's just turn the page now and move on. That will never happen in baseball because of the new rules with the Hall of Fame and some of the voting, you know, some of the new ways of getting in.
Yeah.
Great teammate, great guy, great family. I'm a big fan of Roger.
Now, the baseball, as it sits here, and their negotiations, and they're into them a little bit, and, you know, we forget that it's a work stoppage because it is what it is, but obviously no Twins Fest here and all that, which might be COVID-related, but I don't even know. But where do you think it sits right now, and how much do you fear a shortening of the season or a delay in the season?
I was very encouraged in the last 48 hours that both sides have sat down and they've had some productive talks, right? Not just talks, not just pointing fingers at each other, but productive talks. The players' union took a couple things off the table. The ownership group has agreed to some things, and they're all financial, right? So they're financial things that, to me, means, you know, both sides are some common sense is starting to filter into this negotiation, because I really, with all that's gone on in the last 2 years with, you know, COVID and all the things, and social, you know, issues that all of our cities are in. Baseball was the one sport in the summer where you could go and you could enjoy, and, you know, there were fans at some point, they're not fans, but we really can't have our game be another issue in our town, right? So I just really hope that, you know, our game can figure it out. You're talking, Mike, about a $10 billion industry.
Yeah,
there's enough money to be
enough money
where everybody can be happy.
Yeah. Now right? when you look at that and you hear things like service time and how they can play with getting to 6 years and all those things, do players get real riled up about those kinds of things? You know, minimum rookie contract, things like that. Does that matter a lot, or are most guys saying, "Hey, if you prove yourself, you'll get paid"?
Well, it used to be that way. It used to be where guys were worried about the rules mattered a lot more 20 years ago because guys didn't make as much. So the opportunity of getting to free agency, the opportunity of getting to arbitration was important, you know, to get somewhat of a fair deal with your salary. Nowadays, if you play 5, 6, 7 years in the league, if you screw that money up, that's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but, you know, at the end of the day, both sides have to figure out a good deal, and neither, you know, you can't be on the player's side and think, well, we're going to make substantial money and just put your head in the sand. I think this is an important negotiation for our league and to continue on just the way we're going. But at the end of the day, there's plenty of money there, and I don't think the issues are so earth-shattering the way they're splitting the money. You know, you're talking about right at 51% of where the money is going one side or the other. So you're not, you know,
yeah,
it's not slanted one way or the other too bad. So at the end of the day, let's get the thing done, and let's get down to spring training and have a normal spring. I think both Florida and Arizona really could use that after the last couple of years of them really struggling without having spring.
Yeah, Ron Coomer is our guest talking labor negotiations here in Major League Baseball as we begin to start, you know, it's just starting to feel this week like, hey, it's time to start talking some hot stove, fun baseball kind of stuff. Does a pension mean a lot to players that are in the game, or does that seem so far off to them that they don't care about it? You know how big, and I mean, my gosh, these pensions are getting big. I mean, you're in really good shape if you've got the service time in. But does a player that's going through it, does that mean much to them, or does that just seem so far out there that they don't even come to terms with it?
I think if you're a 25-year-old young player in the league, you probably don't quite understand it.
Yeah.
If you're the 35-year-old player in the league, you understand it a little better. You know, so I think all those questions are relative. At the end of the day, different things matter more to you at different points in your career. And I think we're all guilty of that in some way, shape, or form, whether, you know, you're in the media now, you were playing 20 years ago, or for you, you know, all of us, we think of things differently as we get older. So I think it's a different time. But with the money that's out there, you just, you know, you got to get a good deal for both sides. And some of these issues it can be resolved. I think when you sit down like we have the last couple of days and both sides have made some real concessions, I think that's a really good sign.
Do you think players and management understand that, you know, this ain't the time, as they say, you know, when everybody's hurting in this country for different, not everybody, certainly the vast majority, you know, have different pains for different reasons and certainly a lot of fears. Does that enter in where they go, hey, we got to do this because we can't be seen as the people that wouldn't step up and get our job done?
Well, I really hope so, to be quite honest. I'm not in those negotiations, but boy, you know, when you walk around the ballparks and you're an owner or you're a player and you're seeing all the different things that are going on in our cities, boy, you really hope so, right? I mean, we need some bright spots happening in our towns, right? I mean, just do.
Oh, man, if your ballpark's urban, you need to get some foot traffic going, you know?
Right. I Chicago, Minnesota, yep. Minneapolis. I mean, think about it. All the issues that we've had. We really need some positivity, and we need to get people together and doing some good things. And I think baseball is one of those things that we can do. So I'm really hoping that both sides come to terms here in the next 3 weeks or so and kind of figure this thing out.
Now when they get that off and free agency kicks in, what are we going to see here? Is there going to be a frenzy?
I would think so. You're probably going to get a week or two of free agent signing, and it's going to be off the spring. You know, I would think there's a lot of backroom talks going on right now.
GMs are got the calculator out every day, right?
They do. And the other thing is the friend of a friend that knows the guy that's the GM. I think those things are happening right now, big time. So. Yeah.
Not that I'm saying we would, but you can tell your buddy that if he was available and open to a 3-year deal, he might want to call us right away, right?
You got it. Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Coom, always good to visit with you. Say hi to Paula. I don't have to tell you to stay warm. We're the ones that need to worry about that. And I hope you get up here before spring and I can see you.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm kind of planning on it one last time before the season gets started, but say hi to David. I know David is retired.
Yeah.
And Patrick and Rosie and all those guys around town. I miss you guys.
Same here. Thanks, Coom.
Absolutely.
Ron Coomer, it's fun to visit with him about baseball and everything else. Just a good guy. One of the joys, many joys that I have in this job is, you know, you get a guy like that who becomes a friend. And it's just a friend because, not because of baseball, just because you like being around him. When we come back, Natalie Darwitz, she has played the Olympics, and here come the Olympics. She's now an assistant coach with the University of Minnesota, and they just beat the number one team in the country twice. And, oh, yeah, she used to coach at the institution. Don't feel bad if you can't get in. Most people can't. Hamblin University, and turn that around as well. We'll talk to her about all of the above when we come back on Sports to the Max. A version of the Winter Olympics is coming in Beijing, short of fans, but it's still the Winter Olympics. The Gopher women's hockey team made a huge statement against Wisconsin over the weekend, beating the number one Badgers twice. Let's talk to Natalie Darwitz about both, because she knows Olympics and she knows, as an assistant coach, what happened over the weekend. Natalie, good to visit with you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Let me start with Winter Olympics. What is it like right now? When, you know, first of all, what was your first time? Did you know you'd make the team out? I don't remember how it all went down for you.
Yeah, first time, you know, the team selected late summer, and then, you know, you dwindle down to their roster size end of January, end of December, early January. So then from there, it's just stay healthy, don't get injured, get to the Olympics, and let's play.
So right now they go to California, I think, first, then over to Beijing. What is this time period like for an Olympian when you're finally there, especially maybe that first time, and you're finally going to get to wear it, you know, on an international stage? What is that like as you approach the games?
It's super exciting time right now. They're out in LA and they're going through what's called processing. That's where you kind of go through the meetings, get all your apparel, credentials, stuff like that, so that when you land over in Beijing, you have everything ready to go, and you just head on over to the athlete's village. And then it's about, you know, getting settled in and getting acclimated and into a routine, and then you just are antsy for games to start.
Now, I know it might be different now because of COVID, but what was athlete's village like?
I mean, it was fun. It's where you saw most of the other athletes, and for us it was really cool because that's when the NHLers were in the Olympics, all three, so I was lucky. So you'd see them and just meet other athletes, and you know, it's just your place to call home for the next 3 weeks, and you can make it what you want it to. You could be as social as you want, or you could hole up and bear down and get ready for your games.
Kind of a dorm room setting, is that what it is? And then a lot of common area.
Yeah, we had a mixture, and all three of my Olympics, it was a mixture. Salt Lake was more of a dorm setting. Italy and Canada were more apartment style. So that was kind of nice.
Well, Salt Lake was when Herb Brooks came back to try to reestablish the Magic, and almost did. Canada beating, people forget some of these things. But do you remember watching him? Did you have an impression of him? Now you're coaching. Did you take anything from him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how cool is that? That obviously you grew up with him being a Minnesotan, and then obviously you knew the Miracle on Ice, and then he's basically back doing it over again, and came up just short. We both lost to the Canadians, and just, you know, I think him being in the Olympic Village and seeing us Minnesotans, he kind of gave us extra love, like me and Chrissy and stuff like that. So it was just cool to have that familiarity, and he's just a tremendous, tremendous person. So,
like, what would you have seen from him that you implement into your coaching?
Well, I know, I think obviously if people just watch the movie, they think he was a tough guy, but yeah, he really loved his players and cared for them and wanted the most for them. And I think any coach can relate to that. He just had a style that, you know, maybe was a little rough around the edges, but it worked, and the job got done. Nowadays, I don't know if you can coach like that and get away with it at any level.
Yeah. And actually in Salt Lake, he dialed it back because it was NHL players, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. There's not much, especially with NHL players. He wasn't coaching amateurs like he was in 80. It was a completely different experience where he's coaching guys that probably think they know it all already, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just facilitating it. But he probably still had their heads turned because of who he was.
Yep.
And they still probably listen pretty good.
Natalie Darwitz is our guest. You know, you became head coach at my alma mater, Hamlin, and you took them to places they had never been before. What was that experience like for you?
I had a tremendous time at Hamlin. Just to look back at my 6 years there, we started at the bottom, and in 2 years we went to a playoffs, and then a year later a Frozen Four, and backed it up again with a national championship game and just came up short. But, you know, everything from tree or rink to, you know, building a program really from the ground up was a whole lot of fun. So I really enjoyed my time there and the people that I came across. And it was a tough decision this summer when the U came calling, and Jake and I, my assistant at Hamlin, both went over to the U. So it was a tough decision. But I just felt, you know, for me to grow and hopefully be a Division I head coach one day, that was a step I needed to take.
What did you get out of being a head coach? You know, there are certain things that you can only experience if you're the person in charge. What did you get out of that? How did you? And you'd been a head coach before, just not at the college level, but at Lakeville, obviously, you had great success as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best experience is having experience, and certainly running, you know, that program over there and getting my feet wet in recruiting and just getting connected back into state high school hockey and getting to know other coaches and really having a say of what direction and what players you want your program to go was just a whole lot of fun. So I take that last 6 years at Hamlin as a major stepping stone for me and professionally. Not only that, it's helping me thrive right now with the Gophers, and same with Jake. And, you know, as you mentioned, had a big sweep last weekend against Wisconsin. And so we're not changing who we are as people. We're just bringing that to the next level, which is a lot of fun.
And you get to the next level, and obviously, you know, it's you know what that next level is because you've played it. But how is it different to be an assistant coach in Division I versus a head coach in Division III?
You know, obviously, I don't have the final say.
Yep.
But, you know, hopefully I can make a huge impact, and I'm making a huge impact on the players, and I still do a fair amount of X's and O's and decision making. But at the same time, you know, now I have a boss where I was the boss the last couple of years. So there's a little bit of an adjustment, but I don't think I'm changing because of my job title. From a head to assistant, I'm being who I am and continuing to coach the way I know how to coach and recruit the way I know how to recruit.
Natalie Darwitz is our guest. What coach brought out the best in you? Who did you relate to the most of all the coaches you played for?
Oh, goodness. Well, I got to give my dad a shout-out because
yep.
he's my dad.
Yep.
and
that's where it all started.
He wasn't far, far from the tree. So,
yeah.
You know, he you know, molded me pretty well, but I was really lucky. My high school coach was a guy named Merlin Ravindahl, and he was hard-nosed but cared about us immensely. So, you know, there's times where he's just said, "Are you doing your best?" And it got me going. But I knew he was doing it because he cared about me. And then, obviously, I thought Mark Johnson from Wisconsin was our 2010 Olympic coach. He was a tremendous coach. Just someone with a calm demeanor, that he didn't have to say a whole lot, that he just wanted to go through the boards with.
Are you allowed to like Mark now that he's a Badger, or how does that work?
I don't know if I'm supposed to, but
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I respect him immensely. I think he's a great coach. He's done a whole lot for the women's hockey game. I think he's a tremendous mentor and a role model for me to look up to.
Yeah, he's really found a home there that he's stuck with, and of course had great success there. But I think about Herb Brooks again and Badger Bob didn't always get along so well back in as the stories go, right? Now when you talk about developing a player, whether it's at Hamlin or the University of Minnesota, what's more difficult, to teach them the game or to get to know them so well that you know what buttons to push to motivate them and so that they know you care about them? Which is easier, which is more difficult, and why?
I think the X's and O's is pretty cut and dry. To me, it's from a forward standpoint, we have 11 forwards on our team right now. You got to get to know each and every personality, what makes them tick. You know, if I go up to Taylor Heisey and I say, "Hey, you don't have a goal yet today," who's our leading scorer and probably the best player in the nation, I can guarantee you the next shift she's going to go out and probably have a goal.
All you have to do is mention it, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, just to find out how to make those players tick, because not every one player is the same. Sidney Crosby's not the same as Kaprizov. You know, so you got to just know their personality. And I think teaching the game, the X's and O's and where to be, that's the easy part. The hard part is what makes them tick. Why do they want to be successful? Maybe analogies. I don't know. Storytelling would help them. So I think you just got to get to know the player. I think that's really special. And when you finally figure out that trigger, it's fun to watch it go. Then
is trust the most important thing? They got to believe that what you're saying is going to work and that you care about them. I mean, is that the one word that keeps coming back?
Yeah, I think, you know, trust is a huge thing. Number one. Number two, that they feel, not in any particular order here, but number two, that they feel valued and cared for. I know those are buzzwords these days, but it's true. I feel the same as a coach with my assistants or other coaches. You got to feel valued and that you can be put on the ice and that we have confidence that they can go do a good job and have some fun doing it too.
Does it help to know who they are as a person a lot, or how much do you want to know about them? Do you want to know everything? Do you want to know a little bit about them? What do you want to know?
Well, yeah, I think obviously there's a balance you got to draw there. I don't think we need to know their favorite color,
yeah,
what their favorite meal is, but I think competitively, what their personality is like, what drives them, what's their why, and different situations of how to coach them, whether that's, going to be a little hard on them and call them out, or I got to be a little softer with them and put your arm around their shoulder and say, you can do this.
So like for the Gophers, let's say, would the why for a lot of them be, obviously there's no real... there's professional league, the Whitecaps, whatnot, but not where you're going to make a lot of money in the NHL and all those things. Is the why the Olympics, or for most of them, is it something else?
Well, I think the why for a majority of our team is to be the best players they can and help this program win a national championship. So that's, I think, our why of our team. There are probably three or four of our players that can move on and have that Olympic dream. So those are probably our top kids, and their why, it's pretty clear. Like, they go. They're your most intense athlete. But I think for the team aspect is, how do I get the most playing time? How do I help out this team? How do I help win a game? And then can we win some championships?
Natalie Darwitz is our guest. What about when you have that high-end player who can't figure out why the rest of them don't want to work as hard as they do? How do you counsel them through that? That's a difficult thing, right? Because they're setting a great example, and yet sometimes they're frustrated because they just don't get why people don't want to get there early and stay late and all those things. How do you manage that person?
Well, I'll point out specifically Taylor Heisey again. She's wired that way. She's on the ice early. She's late. She's shooting pucks. And one of the coolest things about her is she's bringing her teammates along with her. Mm-hmm. The ones who maybe don't want to do the work she's doing, she's, hey, come on out with me. She makes it fun. I think that's what it's all about. If it's kind of like a Michael Jordan thing when he said in The Last Dance, hey, I know some of you doing, I dragged my teammates along with me to get where we had to go. I think she's really similar to that.
And you have to be good to get them to come to go, right? I mean, you have to put up some numbers before they'll go with you, right?
Exactly, and then she's a product of her actions. And her teammates are following her footsteps and want to be like her and want to do that. And she gives them confidence in doing it, too. That's what I would say to that. If you don't have a teammate that doesn't want to do it, sometimes they're going to put themselves into a corner when the rest of the team is doing it. And right now, one of the coolest things about our team is a good majority of our team is wanting it. And you're seeing that product on the ice and how we're playing, obviously beating Wisconsin last week, and we have a big weekend coming up against Ohio State, which is another test.
Gopher coaching, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? We got Nadine on the head coach, and Emily West is an assistant coach.
Yep.
She plays for the Gophers, too. So, obviously, the Gophers turning over a lot of good graduates into coaches and into the hockey world.
Last question for you, Natalie. What's it like when you do win? And you're sitting there and you got the medal. Do you feel, at the Winter Olympics, do you feel a real sense of patriotism and that you did this for the country? Or is it more about your teammates because you know the process you've been through? What does that feel like?
All the above. I mean, I think personally it's I got to the highest level possible. We accomplished something. And then, obviously, there's great pride that you're one of, 20-something players representing your country in the sport of ice hockey.
Yep.
I tell you what, I've been fortunate to travel to a lot of different countries. And I'm always like, when I'm over in another country, I'm like, I am so glad I'm from the U.S. And it puts it in perspective how privileged and blessed we are to be in this great nation. So I think anytime a player throws on that USA over their chest and they go to other countries and experience how they have it, it makes you more fortunate and makes you more privileged to play harder for that team.
That's a great point, great one to end on. Natalie, I hope I get to see you soon. COVID restrictions, you never know, but I sure enjoy visiting with you again. Thank you for giving us some time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Natalie Darwitz, nice enough to join us. what a career she's had, huh? Hall of Fame, everything else. You forget how many this state has produced. And she is different, and she is special. And pretty cool to see her and Brad Frost. And Brad, of course, built that program. But to win two from the Badgers over the weekend, wow, that's pretty good stuff. Sports to the Max at WCCO. Sports to the Max taking up to the Timberwolves and the Portland Trailblazers in Portland tonight. I got to tell you, they have become, you got to check them out kind of thing, right? Because you don't know. And they're just kind of goofy enough. You know, Edwards gets ejected. Edwards scores 25 points the next game. Towns gets shut down for three quarters. Towns scores 15 points in the fourth quarter. D'Angelo Russell gets three threes in a row, whatever it is. There's just enough of them out there that you want to take a bite and go, what is this team? What is this that they? What's Chris Finch got going on here? What is it that he's doing here that I'm now kind of drawn to this team? And even though they're not a dominant team and they're a frustrating team sometimes, that's part of the charm of why I enjoy following them, because I'm not quite sure what I'm going to get. And when it's good, it's really, really good. Now, when it's not good, it's, you know, but it's better than what we've seen before. And there's just something about this team that kind of keeps you engaged and interested, even though you're not quite sure what it is you're going to get from them. That's what I'm saying. And tonight we'll get some of that from them. You know, Minnesota's become a hotbed for basketball in so many different ways, on so many different levels. And one of the things that's really moved the needle on it is these breakdown classics, where they have these one-day deals where you know, kind of marquee matchups of teams that wouldn't play each other because they're not in the same conference or the same section. And Justin Hegna is the guy that really created it conceptually. And what it's done is draws people to the gyms because they get to see a whole bunch of good Minnesota players. And it draws college coaches there because they get to see a whole lot of Minnesota players in one day. When we come back, we'll visit with him about that and the impact and what it's been like to come back from COVID and highlight some of the best Minnesota has to offer. News Talk 830 WCCO Sports to the Max rolls on.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Where's our car?
It's been stolen.
Well, call our insurance agent. I'm right here.
Oh, hey, Jen. You got our invite.
Love the dress.
Are we covered for this?
Of course. That's why you chose Auto Owners. We work together to get the right coverage. So when the unexpected happens, you know you're covered.
That's simple human sense.
Now, how do we get to the airport?
Take mine.
Thanks, Jen.
Ask your independent agent if Auto Owners make sense for you.
Ark Raiders. A multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of Ark and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. Ark Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just
for
you.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.